And now, exclusive to Patreon, it's...
Hello patrons, and welcome back to Underwood & Finch Underground. And this time we're rejoining Underwood & Finch as they actually go underground. But we'll get to them in just a moment. First, we need a quick catch-up on the events that brought us here. The last time we were with Underwood & Finch was episode 40, when they and Elizabeth Daventry were at the journalist Ronnie Bishop's flat, where they found Ronnie dead in a pool of his own blood in an apparent suicide that Underwood explained was most definitely not suicide. He'd been murdered by a vampire. But before he died, Ronnie had been looking at an old copy of the A to Z of London, the map book, old enough to still have Aldwych Underground Station on it as being an open and operational station. Quick historical footnote, according to Wikipedia, the station closed in 1994. Ronnie left a bloody mark on the map of the underground on the back of the A to Z guide before he died. At first, our heroes thought he might be trying to indicate Holborn Station, but then they realised the age of the book and that it was in fact Aldwych that he was indicating. Here's a flashback. That's not why Ronnie used his last ounce of strength trying to point out Aldwych, is it? He knew I was coming. He was trying to tell me something. And what was that? That's where Damo went when he ran into the tunnel. Ronnie knew London, but he must have forgotten about Aldwych because it's been gone from the map for so long. But tonight, it must have come back to him. He got his old A to Z down and checked it, and sure enough, there it was, just off Holborn on the Piccadilly line. And maybe he was going to ask me about it. I don't know. But the main thing is, assuming they haven't walled off the tunnel to Aldwych, that must be where Damo went. And if Lady Underwood is still down there... They could be working together, said Elizabeth. Oh, that's splendid, said Underwood. That's all I need. And so... Later, outside, Underwood found a set of footprints deeply impressed into the front lawn. To be that deeply impressed, he reasoned, the person that made them would have had to have jumped from a high window like Ronnie's. It was a jump far too high for a human being to make, and so this for him confirms that the London vampire, whoever that may be, killed Ronnie. Now, Ronnie's laptop and camera had also been taken from the scene of the crime. And of course, as we know, both camera and laptop had photos taken by Ronnie of the people chasing into Holborn Station. Who were those people? Well, there was Damo, chased by David, chased by the OCU cop, Whitmore, and lastly, the sect operative, Glover. If the London vampire killed Ronnie in order to get that evidence, well... I'll just leave that there for you to mull over, because now we're going to follow Underwood, David and Elizabeth as they go to the place that at the end of episode 40, Underwood said was the one place on Earth he genuinely fears to tread. Underwood & Finch, Underground. A novel written and performed for podcast by Mike Bennett. This podcast is intended for an adult audience. Episode 55. David was waiting. He stood on the pavement of Surrey Street with Underwood and Elizabeth Daventry at the foot of the few shallow steps leading up to the house that had once been Underwood's. Underwood stood perfectly still, staring at the door as he had been for well over a minute now. David sighed and turned to Elizabeth.
"Maybe you should do it, Elizabeth."
"Do what?" said Elizabeth.
"The honours."
He cocked his head to the door. "Knock and see if she's in." Without turning, Underwood said,
"While we do what, Finch? Hide behind the car like a couple of frightened schoolgirls? Don't be absurd." Well, I'm not the one acting like a frightened schoolgirl, my lord. No offence, but you've been looking at that door for about 2 minutes now.
Underwood turned to him, annoyed.
I'm trying to work out what to say, aren't I? One doesn't just go blundering into these things. I haven't seen the woman for over 60 years, and as far as we know, she thinks I'm dead. What would you have me do? Just give her a peck on the cheek and say, "Hello, darling, I'm home, mix me a martini."
Well, no, of course not. I was just, I don't know, I thought maybe if Elizabeth knocked, it might take the pressure off you a bit. Get things rolling, you know?
Well, I'll thank you not to concern yourself, Flinch. I'm quite capable of managing the situation myself. He turned back to face the door. And anyway, it could be risky. Her ladyship's probably not going to be pleased to see me, so if anyone's going to get lamped with the proverbial frying pan, it should be me.
So, I just need a few minutes to think what I'm going to say. All right.
Yes, my lord.
David looked at his watch. It was 3:15. He wasn't sure what time the sun rose in London in early May, but it couldn't be more than a couple of hours before the sky began to brighten. He sighed quietly and looked around. The streets were silent, but for the occasional car driving along the Strand or down by the Thames. He turned his attention to the Aldwych Station building adjacent to Underwood's house. Nowhere on it was there any signage bearing the station's name, nor the familiar London Transport roundel. Nevertheless, it didn't look abandoned. It appeared to be clean and in good repair, its glazed ox-blood tiles gleaming in the glow from the street lamp behind him. There were four doors, one regular door with a small window overhead that David presumed had been used by station staff, two larger doors for passenger traffic over which were written exit and entrance respectively, and a fourth glass door that looked as if it were part of a small office. There was a window to the office, but there were blinds on the other side, making it impossible to see inside. David wandered over. He placed a hand against the tiled wall and reflected on the story he had heard on Arthur and Underwood's tapes. He tried to imagine what it must have been like during the Blitz in World War II, the families queuing here night after night to go down to the shelter, their bags packed, never knowing if, come the morning, their homes would still be standing or have been reduced to piles of burning rubble.
David, are you all right?
David turned at the question, spoken softly behind him. Elizabeth was looking at him with concern.
Yeah, he smiled, just thinking about this place.
Aldwych? She looked up at the facade. What about it?
Oh, you know, the wartime air raid shelter and all that. Rose singing down there on the platform for the families, sheltering from the bombs. Everybody trying to keep happy despite the shit they were going through.
He turned back to the smooth tile surface beneath his fingers.
It's kind of humbling, isn't it?
If you say so. I was actually thinking you might be upset about the death of your friend, the guy back at the flat.
Oh, Ronnie? Well, he's hardly a friend. I'd only known him for about 5 minutes. But thanks.
I'm fine, all things considered.
Did his lordship say anything to you about who he thought might have been responsible? I saw you two looking at something on the lawn outside.
Oh, yeah, there was a set of footprints made by somebody jumping from Ronnie's window. Man-sized, so not Lydia's.
His lordship thinks it's your friend Damo?
David nodded.
Probably, yeah. I guess that's what we're here to find out, isn't it?
But you still think he's innocent, at least of the Skip murder?
Well, yeah, I do. He admitted to me that he'd killed the priest, so if he was feeling confessional and he had done the other one, why not just admit to that too?
It wouldn't have made any difference. It's not like I was in a position to do anything about it. She nodded and was about to reply when they both turned at the sound of footsteps trotting briskly up stone steps. Without a word to them, Underwood went up to the door.
Do you think we should go over or wait here?
Asked Elizabeth.
Oh, I reckon we should wait here. Give him some room.
Underwood paused at the door, having noticed a small sign on the wall. He turned to Elizabeth, pointing to it.
What's this? It says Department of Philosophy.
Oh, yes, that'll be the university. I'm afraid I forgot.
Forgive me, my lord, I'm not really au fait with Lady Underwood as a client. The partners would really be the people to...
What university? What are you talking about?
Well, now that you point it out, I remember from talk of her in the office that she'd leased part of the property out to a university.
She nodded to the house.
Apparently that part. I can call my father if you...
No, that won't be necessary. It's patently obvious it's that part. The question is, which part does she still retain?
He looked down to the basement.
But she still lives here, does she?
Asked David, his head swivelling from Elizabeth to Underwood.
Oh, she lives here, said Underwood. I can feel her presence. Her scent is...
He closed his eyes and, with his face toward the basement steps, flared his nostrils and sniffed the air.
God, it's been so long. But it's her.
She was here recently.
Wait there.
He walked around the railings and opened the gate to the basement level. He went down the steps and stopped at the window, through which he saw various desks and chairs facing a whiteboard.
Interesting. What is it, my lord?
Asked David. Underwood pointed at the window.
There's a classroom in here,
so she can't have kept the basement.
And yet...
Elizabeth joined David at the gate.
Well, she definitely kept her home here, my lord. Perhaps I should call my father. He won't mind.
Of course he won't mind. It's his lord and master calling.
All right, go on.
Elizabeth walked a few steps away and took out her phone. When David looked back into the basement, Underwood was sniffing at the door.
Can you still smell her?
Yes, though it's mingled with other scents. Many people use this door and the passage beyond, and there's no doorbell either. It's clearly also part of this bloody university, which leads me to believe she must have retained only the lowermost levels.
And those are connected to the station, right?
Well, they were, but who knows what else she's leased?
I'd say they are, my lord. It would explain how Damo managed to get back to her after I left him in the tunnels, assuming that's what he did.
That's what he did, all right. His is one of the other scents that I'm picking up here, but it's changed.
He turned back to David. No doubt about it, Flinch. Our Mr. Sullivan is indeed now a vampire.
My lord,
Elizabeth hurried back, phone in hand.
Her ladyship has retained possession of the lowermost levels. She has access from the same door as... Well, yes, that one. Father says he can get the door key from the office and be here within 30 minutes if...
We don't have 30 minutes, said Underwood.
He slid the fingers of his left hand through the letterbox to secure the door, then placed the palm of his right hand flat against the door by the keyhole. David, realising what he was about to do, called out,
"Wait, my lord, there could be..."
Too late. Underwood pushed the door. There was a crack on the other side as the jamb split, then he let the door swing open. He turned to look back up at David.
"What?"
"An alarm."
An alarm on a school?
Don't be ridiculous. To keep the kids from escaping, perhaps, but not the other way around. Who'd want to break into a school, for heaven's sake? Come on.
David scanned the building for alarm systems. He didn't share Underwood's blithe lack of concern for its security, even if there were no alarm bells ringing. To Elizabeth, he said, "Could be a silent alarm connected to police or private security." She nodded.
"Perhaps, but I don't see any warning signs or flashing boxes anywhere. Maybe he's right."
"Flinch!" Underwood called from inside the basement entrance.
"Oh, well, I guess we'll know soon enough." David led Elizabeth down the steps and into the building. Underwood was waiting by a door in the hallway.
"Come on, come on, and shut the door behind you."
"Wait, where's the light?" said David.
"It's all right for you, but we won't see a bloody thing once that's shut."
"Here,"
said Elizabeth. Then to Underwood,
"With your permission, my lord."
"Yes, yes,"
Underwood replied. She pulled the front door closed and turned on the light.
"All right, now on the other side of this door is the lift. It's a noisy old thing, so it's bound to alert her to our presence. So, once we're on board, get behind me, just in case she comes at us."
"Comes at us?" said David. "With what?"
"Here, look, my lord, maybe you should go down alone at first, you know. Sounds like you two might want some privacy for a while to work things out."
"Thank you, Flinch, but there's no time for such considerations. If Damo is responsible for these murders, then I want you and Elizabeth on hand as witnesses."
"Witnesses? To what?"
"To his confession.
You know, in case I kill him.
But you're not going to kill him.
Well, no, it's not my plan to. Clearly, Rose has taken him under her wing, and he's now, hopefully, behaving like a responsible member of the vampire community. But between her probably difficult reaction to seeing me again and my confronting him as being a rogue, things may get ugly, and he may get hurt. If that happens, questions will be asked in the family. Not that my word isn't golden, you understand, but it doesn't hurt to have a few witnesses in such situations. That, and I'm sure you'd like to be there to ensure he doesn't do anything foolish.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Good show. Then, let us descend. He tried the lift door. It was locked.
Oh, dear, said Elizabeth. Perhaps we should wait until morning. I can come back, and we can do this in a more business-like fashion. I could bring repairman for the front door, too, and...
No, said Underwood. He felt along the top of the door frame, found the key, and held it up for Elizabeth to see. Fix the door later, by all means, but I need to know my house is in order tonight. And by that, I don't mean this house, I mean the whole city. There's only one London vampire, and I'm it. And I don't take kindly to others shitting on my doorstep. He unlocked the door and opened it. The scissor gate was drawn on the empty cage lift shaft beyond. Underwood pressed the lift call button, and the system juddered into life, the wheelhouse at the top of the shaft squealing and groaning as it lowered the birdcage lift down to them.
"Blimey," said David.
"Yeah, that'll let her know we're coming, even if she's down on the station belting out 'We'll meet again' at the top of her voice."
"She doesn't belt out anything, Flinch. She may be mad, but she has an exquisite voice."
"Sorry, my lord. No disrespect intended."
The lift arrived. Underwood grasped the handle of the scissor gate and drew it back.
"All aboard. I'll drive."
David and Elizabeth entered the lift, and David recognised the familiar smell of the underground carried up on a breeze from below. He looked out into the blackness beyond the cage, and in the second before Underwood closed the door on the hallway, cutting off the only light source, he glimpsed the stone steps winding round the wall of the ventilation shaft that enclosed the lift structure. Then the door closed, and there was only pitch darkness. The scissor gate squealed as Underwood drew it closed.
"You didn't think to add a light when you had this built, my lord?"
"I don't need lights."
"Yeah, but I mean for your guests."
In the blackness, he heard Underwood chuckle.
"Typically, Flinch, for my guests, darkness is the least of their fears."
He pushed a button, and the lift began its squealing descent. David grabbed onto the cage. One hand fell upon Elizabeth's, already in place, her muscles tight with tension.
"Oh, sorry."
"That's all right," said Elizabeth. She sounded fearful. Underwood watched them with amusement, their eyes blind, wide and staring, searching for a sliver of light in the black to give some clue as to where they were. For a moment, he toyed with the idea of applying the brake, just for the fun of it. But then the lift eased to a stop as they arrived. "Maybe another time," he smiled.
"Here we are, then. I'd better give her a shout in case she thinks we're intruders. She might have a shotgun or something at the ready."
"Yeah," said David. "And if she is you, she might just use it. Maybe we better get down, Elizabeth."
"Rose!"
Underwood shouted.
"It's me, Daniel."
He listened for a reply. When none came, he continued.
"Rose, I'm going to open the door, okay?"
No reply. Underwood turned back to David and Elizabeth to speak, but saw only Elizabeth staring ahead, terrified. He looked down to see David hunkered, his fingers curled and clinging to the cage.
"Flinch, what are you doing?"
David looked up to the sound of his voice.
"What do you mean, what am I doing? I told you, I'm ducking, aren't I? If she shoots you with a shotgun at this range, she shoots all of us."
"Well, you can relax. She's not there."
"How do you know?"
"You mean besides the fact that she's not replying?"
"Yeah."
Underwood rolled his eyes. He drew back the scissor gate and opened the door on the other side.
"There, see?"
"No, I bloody don't. For Christ's sake, could you turn on a light, my lord? I'm as blind as a fucking bat."
"Bats aren't blind."
You know what I...
David broke off as light flared before him. He looked away and then turned back, squinting to see Underwood standing illuminated in the doorway. At his feet were rats. He counted 4, 5, 6 of them, a tangle of writhing bodies and tails until they saw David and Elizabeth. Then they stopped, standing quite still and watching them with their tiny black eyes.
"Sorry about the vermin," said Underwood. "I'm afraid it looks as if she's rather let the place go."
"Oh, my God!"
Elizabeth recoiled, taking a step behind David and taking him by the shoulders.
"My lord, please!"
Underwood chuckled.
"Vile, aren't they? I've never cared for them either, but Rose always had an affinity for the things, or at least she did after she withdrew down to that bally station."
He waved a hand at the rats.
"Go on, shoo!"
The rats scurried away as if he had brandished a blazing torch at them. Wincing, David gently prized Elizabeth's fingers from his shoulders.
"Sorry, but do you mind?"
Elizabeth withdrew her hands and corrected her posture.
"I'm sorry, but rats, you know."
"Yeah, I know. You're lucky you got behind me before I could get behind you. I'm not exactly fond of them either."
"Well, that's one thing we all have in common then," said Underwood. "Come on, let's have a look around."
Elizabeth was hesitant.
"Are you sure, my lord? I mean, if Lady Underwood is still resident here, isn't that a bit trespassy?"
"Is that your legal opinion, Elizabeth?"
"Well, actually, yes, it is."
That, and she was appalled at the idea of encountering any more rats.
"Then I suggest you dig out the paperwork on my will pertaining to this property. It should state that it reverts to her ladyship only in the event of my death, or presumed death, should I go missing in action, which I did, but, as you see, I'm very much in the pink. So, unless I'm mistaken, it's still mine, no?"
"I should have to look at the will."
"Well, let's just assume I'm right, shall we? Come on."
He turned and strode off. David stepped out of the lift and into a funk of damp rot and other unpleasant odours. The edges of the carpet were peppered with rat turds. No doubt there was rat pee all over it too. He didn't envy Underwood his heightened sense of smell. Elizabeth joined him, her nose wrinkled as she looked around with disgust at the mouldering flock wallpaper and filthy red carpet, along the centre and length of which a dark, shiny path had been worn. She grimaced as the soles of her shoes stuck ever so gently to its surface as she and David followed Underwood.
"So you say Damo's been here, my lord. Is he here now?"
asked David.
"Well, I can't say for sure, but I suspect not," said Underwood.
"Why?"
"One can hear the racket of the elevator throughout the entire premises. If they were here, they would surely have heard it, and so come to investigate."
"Well, maybe they thought it was the police. They could be legging it down to the station even as we speak."
"I think not."
"Why not?"
"Because of the rats, their behaviour."
"The rats? What do you mean? They seemed pretty laid back to me."
"Laid back?"
Underwood frowned.
"They weren't reclining, Flinch."
"No, my lord, it's a modern way of expressing that they were relaxed, you know, like they were reclining mentally, so to speak."
Underwood raised his eyebrows.
"Oh, I see. Well, yes, I suppose they were. That was because I just arrived. But if there were other vampires here, especially the lady of the house, whom I presume they consider to be their mistress, they wouldn't have been around the lift at all. They'd have been laid back, closer to her vicinity."
"Why?"
"Because rats like us, Flinch. We have a mastery over the creatures."
"How horrible," said Elizabeth.
"Yes, I know. But we must knock them. They have their uses."
David didn't feel like he wanted to know what those uses might be. He said,
"Okay, so if Rose and Damo aren't here, where do you reckon they are?"
"How on earth should I know? Probably out hunting, I would imagine. Hopefully she's teaching him how to do it properly without bringing down the weight of the law on them."
"And the media," added Elizabeth.
"Actually, I think she might have started that teaching already, my lord. Damo was telling me more or less as much when I caught up to him in the tunnel.
He said he's all right now. He's got a system. No need to worry about any further cock-ups like that priest.
Yes, you mentioned that. However, I remain unconvinced.
He pushed open the two double doors that led into the oak-panelled living room.
Anyway, this is, or was, my...
The sight that greeted him stopped the words in his throat.
Oh, my...
He stood, staring in silence for a moment before walking slowly inside. David followed, but the light from the hallway barely penetrated the darkness within. He felt for and found a light switch near the door and flicked it on. A large crystal chandelier lit up, the strength of its illumination diffused by the thick cobwebs that wreathed it like a husk. Elizabeth looked around in consternation.
Oh dear, how on earth can she live like this? Said Underwood.
He turned slowly on the spot, staring appalled at the neglect of decades. Most of the furniture was draped with once white dust covers, now grey under thick crusts of dust and rat turds. David bent to closer examine some of the feces on a table and saw that many were fresh. He wiped his fingers on his chest, even though he hadn't touched anything.
Well, I think it's safe to say she doesn't use this bit of house too often. The only thing that's been in here lately is rats.
And spiders,
said Elizabeth, having just spotted a huge one on the chandelier.
Evidently, said Underwood.
He sounded distracted, and David turned to see him gazing up at the dusty portrait of a beautiful woman in Georgian dress over the fireplace. David came over to his side.
Who's she? No one, said Underwood.
He turned and walked a few paces away, his eyes roving around the room. David, sensing his reluctance to engage on the topic, decided to let it drop.
So, should we go on, my lord?
Go on? Where?
Into the flat. There's more to this place than just this room, right?
Oh, of course, yes. There are other floors below. We could...
He turned, and his eyes were drawn once again to the portrait.
Go on in a moment. There's no hurry, after all. They're not here.
Well, yeah, but we don't know that for sure, do we?
Underwood remained fixed by the painting, and David looked again at the woman in the picture. She stood against a background of tall trees and a sky full of smoky clouds. Her long, dark hair fell about her neck and shoulders, and her ivory skin, even through the film of dust that covered the surface of the painting, almost glowed with ethereal radiance. Her soft, dark eyes were looking at something out of frame that caused a subtle smile to play upon her small mouth, and her lips, like her cheeks, were a delicate rose pink.
That's not her ladyship, is it? That picture's way too old for it to be her.
So, who
is it?
It's no one, like I said. Just a model, an actress, pretending to be someone else.
Well, who's she pretending to be?
Martha.
David's eyebrows rose.
Martha? What, your Martha?
Underwood turned to face him.
Obviously my Martha, Flinch. Do you think I'd pay someone of Gainsborough's stature to paint someone else's Martha?
Gainsborough?
Elizabeth interjected.
This is a Gainsborough, my lord?
Yes,
said Underwood, glad to see someone was impressed.
Splendid, isn't it?
God, yes, isn't it? Can you imagine the stir in the art world if word of this picture ever got out?
Yeah, said David. Even I've heard of Gainsborough, and you can write what I know about art on the back of a packet of fags.
He reached out to run his fingers over the bottom of the gilded frame, the dust gathering and tumbling at his touch.
My lord, are you... I mean, do you think you might retrieve this? It's such a tragedy to have something this magnificent hanging in this crypt.
Again, Elizabeth, I refer you to my will regarding this place. I imagine right of ownership refers not just to the property, but also to the contents.
It usually does.
He smiled at David.
As you both know from recent experience.
David was about to reply when Underwood, noticing something in the shadows beneath a table near the fireplace, waved a hand and cried, "Shoo!" Two rats darted out and scampered across the floor. Elizabeth let out a small scream and leapt from their path as they ran out the door. Abandoning protocol, she climbed up on one of the covered sofas.
"Shit, I'm sorry, my lord, but I can't just..."
She closed her eyes as a shudder of disgust ran through her.
"If there are any more of those bloody things in here, I just can't bear the thought of them coming anywhere near me."
Underwood looked around.
"Oh, don't worry. I think that's probably the last of them." "Yes, well, if it's all the same to you, I'll just stay up here, just in case."
"No, no, by all means," said Underwood. He noticed David had approached the object on the table that the rats had been lurking beneath. Its dust sheet had slipped from the bulk of it, revealing its twin antique tape reels, thick with dust.
"A tape recorder," said David, pointing to the machine. He turned to Underwood. "Is this the one you and Arthur used to record your memoir?"
"Yes, it's a magnetophon. A far cry from your MP3 players and CDs of today, what? Add it to the list of possible retrievals, Elizabeth. Now that I've got the original tapes back in my possession, it'll be interesting to hear them again on the contraption that recorded them. Perhaps you'd like to pop round one night, Flinch. We can listen together and I'll fill in any gaps."
"Oh, thank you, my lord. I'd like that very much. Assuming, of course, that we get through our current predicament in one piece."
"Oh, of course we will. We've unmasked Sullivan as being at least 50% responsible for the London vampire crimes, and once we speak to him, I'm confident that we'll uncover whoever's responsible for the other 50%.
"Well, he doesn't know who done it, if that's what you're getting at. He thought it was probably you."
"And I think it's probably him. So, the sooner he and I have our little tête-à-tête, the better, what?"
At that point, as if on cue, there came a distant mechanical jolt from somewhere overhead, followed by the shudder of the elevator wheelhouse groaning into motion. Underwood cocked his ear toward the sound.
"Ah, going up, if I'm not mistaken. She must be on the roof."
"The roof?" said Elizabeth. "Yes, she must have flown home."
His eye was caught by movement out in the hall, and then everyone noticed a flurry of rats scampering past the doorway in the direction of the lift.
"Hello, there goes the reception committee. I suppose we'd better go and join them, eh?"
He started for the door, but stopped when he realised he was proceeding alone. He turned back. Neither David nor Elizabeth had moved.
"Well, come on."
"If you don't mind, my lord," said Elizabeth, from where she stood wobbling slightly on the sofa, "I'd prefer to stay here until the rats have gone."
Unimpressed, but conceding her request, Underwood turned a questioning eye to David.
David began. "I have to say, I'd kind of prefer..."
"Oh, for God's sake, Flinch," Underwood snapped. "Some guardian you would have turned out to be. At the first sign of a few rats, you buckle and quail like a lily-livered girl."
Elizabeth bit back the impulse to rebuke Underwood for his sexism, but David was quick to question his maths.
"That's not a few, my lord. There's fucking loads of them." "They're not dangerous, you shivering ninny."
"I'm not a shivering ninny. I just don't want to stand in a sea of wild rats while we're waiting for the lift. And anyway, I'm not your guardian. And even if I was, there's nothing you need guarding from, is there?"
"No."
"So then, we'll just wait here while you go and have your reunion with Rose, in the middle of a swarm of rats."
Underwood raised a warning finger.
"Are you trying to be funny, Flinch?"
"No, my lord, that is the case, is it not?"
Underwood scowled at him, unable to deliver a stinging comeback, and equally unable, due to his reluctance to deal with Rose, to confidently leave the room either. Down the hall, the lift sank to a juddering halt. They listened as the scissor gate was drawn back and the door opened. For a moment, there was only the sound of various rats squealing for attention, but then, in a tone Underwood recognised as one to fear, Rose's voice called down the hall.
"Daniel!"
And so, listeners, the hour of Lord and Lady Underwood's reunion is finally at hand. Will they run into each other's arms and slow dance to Peaches and Herbs reunited? Or will they tear lumps out of each other? All will be revealed next time in Underwood and Finch Underground. The music on the podcast is Ahmad Armour by Farid Farjad, courtesy of Terranay Records and our good friend Fawaz El Maloud. You can buy the track from Amazon or iTunes or stream it from Spotify. And interestingly, if you search for Underwood and Finch on Spotify, you will find a whole playlist that I have made featuring music from the original podcast, Underwood and Finch. I hope you enjoy it. And so, there we are, ladies and gentlemen. That was Underwood and Finch Underground, episode 55, and I hope you enjoyed it. As you can no doubt tell, we are now in the final act of Underwood and Finch Underground. Things are starting to come together, and soon all will be revealed. That is, all that you don't know already, because at this stage you do know quite a bit, but not everything. We still have some mysteries left to unravel, and once we do, Underground will end. And the next volume in the Underwood and Finch saga will begin. Huzzah! Huzzah! So there's a lot still to come and a lot to look forward to before I finally close the book on Underwood and Finch forever. But saying that, you know, whether I close the book on Underwood and Finch forever is entirely up to you. Whatever happens in this book or the next book in the saga, we still have 300 years of Underwood and Finch that I could mine, if you want me to. Basically, Underwood and Finch will go on for as long as you want it to. If you keep supporting me here at Patreon to keep producing Underwood and Finch, then that's exactly what I'll do. But from me for now, then, ladies and gentlemen, until the moon rises again over Underwood and Finch, thank you for listening, and farewell.
This podcast has been brought to you today by you. Yes, you, and all my other sponsors at Patreon. Thank you for supporting me, and never forget that everything I produce from now on, be it on paper or on podcast, is as a result of your contribution. Yeah! Woo, yeah! I did a mini fist pump there, but obviously you couldn't see it.